Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm presuming here that if we run into some complications with Skype, that's how we send this out. So I'm presuming here that we're on the air. Of course, our technical team, which is me, is looking into the resolution of the problem, and we should have that sorted out before the next episode. This happens, what, this is the second or third time in 5 years. So we'll presume that everything is good, and look forward to hearing you shortly. I should do, you're going to hear a test of our system here. It's we're going to have to do this live because we don't have any other choice right now. What a nuisance. I think we're good. At any rate, we're looking at a fabulous day. This is the 7th day of June, the 158th day, 200 of two, only leaving us 207 left. We've got a countdown of, 14 days till the summer solstice. I hope that gives you enough time to focus your thoughts. It's been a remarkable week here in North America. We're seeing the exposure of corruption at the highest level, has little to do with the sport. I'm talking about FIFA and World Football. Has little to do with the sport and everything to do with power and greed and despotism. So if you're going to reorganize and move into open areas where there is frontiers, the rule of law is still a bit dodgy, then of course we're going to expect that there's going to be some shady dealings. I don't think we any of us of mature age can say that we're shocked. It's disappointing, but there's always levels of disappointment out there to help us redefine the need to prevail. It's a pleasure to have you. You found the Masonic Home Companion always interesting. We're going to get into a little bit of a taste of the descriptions and analysis of tracing boards. Again, we're going to continue on with that. Have an interesting theme today, I believe, and then I want to get tucked into fairly promptly here. And I've referred to this as the phenomenology of Freemasonry. These are the types of words that we sometimes hear, but not necessarily can define promptly. So I'm just going to give you a very, very brief sentence or two so you have it, it's fresh in your thoughts. It's the science of phenomena, and it's distinct from that of the nature of being. This simply means a little bit heady, I agree, but it's an approach that concentrates on the study of consciousness and the objects of direct experience, right? It's the study of structures of consciousness experience from the first-person point of view. So the central structure of an experience is its intentionality. It's being directed towards something as it is an experience of or about an object. Right? Starting to get a sense? So think of it as the study of the structures of consciousness as you experience them. What you experience. The phenomena of the world. The term, it comes from a Greek, like a lot of these, of course. It's a Greek source for the word phenomenon, and that means appearance. So it's the study of appearances as opposed to reality. So the point to illustrate this, the reality of what's going on with these folks, these corruption scandals going on around the world or within our governments, is an impression. The reality is different. Yeah, it's our perception is that there's something dodgy and shady going on, and the way that it's handled, is with force. So when we see that being done, we usually assume, right-minded people usually assume that that's covering up something immoral or illegal going on, something that's outside the rule of law. So people in democracies being forced at gunpoint to withdraw their protest, like the Occupy movement, usually find that there's it fuels concern The concern doesn't go away. Never does. But, of course, Masons would understand that in our study. So here we're going to I'm asking you to take a look at not necessarily the reality, but the impression of Freemasonry, phenomenology and Freemason. So the personal development has never been the purview of a lodge. You know, when we talk about the point, it's to make a good man better. It's to seek out happiness. Well, if we begin to mine those words and find out what they mean, it's like charity. It's not that Victorian sense of the demeaning, here's a shilling, get off the sidewalk, and I don't want to look at your poverty, so stay out of my way. That's quite prevalent here in our culture, in most of the developed world. But it's never that work, that piece of the work, character development, our appreciation of the world around us, our understanding, our study. One would think all of the ingredients are there inside the books of Masonry, that in education, the orientation to what the order is and what it is not and what it does and what it does not. It's not a classroom, but it is a classroom. It's not a doctrine, but it is a doctrine. So it all depends on the phenomenological view, your impression. So there you have it. So the development, and this you can see, this is sharing my impression, my sense of the phenomenology of Masonry. The lodge isn't where personal development occurs. It may be stimulated, it may be inspired, but the lodge itself, walking into a lodge, dressing up pretty with all of the jewels and badges and adornments, don't change the nature of the man. May change the context of him. If a corrupt man comes into a lodge, does that make him more corrupt if he makes vows and statements that he has no commitment to achieve? Does that make him more corrupt because it's done in front of his peers than it would if he was outside in public? Interesting kind of a question. Lodges contain a well of knowledge. No question about it. A wealth of knowledge. You walk in and you know that these rooms and the whole notion is both practical. You have a seat, you have heat, you have lighting, you have water. That's the practical features, but it also operates on a clearly symbolic level. The nature and layout of the lodge, the orientations of people within it, has history. That's really kind of an interesting read. Why do we face each other as opposed to sitting in rows facing the east? It happens for a historic reason, and we'll get into that. Many of you will have those reasons at your fingertips or a reason that you have been told. Whether a member has a thirst for this knowledge, the knowledge that's available, is known only to him. How deeply he drinks is evident to all, though. If he drinks from that well of knowledge in a very shallow way, everybody around can tell. Whether he fits in or he's a bit of a dilettante doesn't really matter. We know that whether the fellow is making an effort and whether he's a clever guy, whether he's got it. But how deeply he drinks, that's what we know. We know the amount, but not whether he has that thirst for knowledge. You can fake it, I guess. If I understand the lamentations and concerns stated over the centuries, it seems there is a group that define this as a personal failing, a result of having lowered standards for admission. You know, we offer this knowledge, and some people remain separated from it as oil is from water, always floating on the surface. Well, something's got to float on the surface, I suppose. But underneath that surface layer is this engagement. only right, I profess here, only right-minded people should be allowed into line of citizens waiting to ask their single question of the Delphi. Is that right? The result of having lowered our standards for admission is played out in front of us with these fellows that have a superficial appetite, a light appetite, you might say. And I equated that with that only you, us, right-minded, should be allowed in line to ask our question of the Delphi. Well, perhaps I'm not the Greek scholar that you are. Perhaps it was a weeding out process that only worthy questions were presented to the oracle. That am I going to be married? Does Johnny like me? Were the types of questions that were too routine for her? I don't know that. So the impression is that any question, the rigor of getting to the oracle, waiting in line and asking the question, I think was in itself sufficiently daunting that only the committed would go through the process. And that people that had, because it took commitment and drive and time and inclination, I think that myself, that impression carries over into Freemasonry. That, in fact, it's not a lowering of standards that's occurred. That the standard is, if we think about it, humanity and all in all of its variation. Embracing the idea of variation as a singular view of inclusion. What you do with it is not our business. Not our business. Now, some might think that that leaves the impression that it doesn't matter, that the study and enrichment of the mind just doesn't matter. I would argue that, in fact, this is the release of control that's necessary for us to show respect to each man. And that as long as we're holding on to the reins of authority and control very tightly, as long as his presence in the lodge meets our needs or the lodge's needs rather than his, there can be no trust. Different times, it's hard not to notice how aggressive some things are within Masonry, and particularly the hand always out reaching into the pocket. Now, if this seems to be have been performed as if like a well-rehearsed ballet, this is quite accepted and is acknowledged, and it goes on. Now, you and I might differ on our opinion about that. Or we could say our contributions to the lodge is an ongoing commitment. Well, there are people that want to do it on the cheap. Well, if it's 100 men that want to do it on the cheap, who am I to say they don't want to pay for the tuition of Harvard Law School? They want to get into the community college. They still crave education, but what they require is different than what Queens or Western or Guelph or one of the other Augusta universities of this country are able to achieve. Perhaps they are more practical and they want to study what they want to study. Fine. I could say fine. What does that affect, or what impression does that give leave about the order? If we retract, recoil from all of this and point fingers at the so-called, and redefine the problem as the loss of standard, that's what's happened. We just seem to let anybody in. Well, I'm saying exactly, we let anybody in. They let me in, and my goodness. So, toss of a coin. Luck of the draw, caprice, serendipity, whatever the reason, drive, ambition, you know. We've all seen those fellows that thought they were going to make have more business contacts if they became a Mason, only to be disappointed. But the idea of that collective community has a sense of entitlement that goes with it. We can't deny that. Just as if I pass you and you're, you know, I was at a Brock University a couple of years ago. Coincidentally, it makes me think of it, these. And there was a gathering of monks. And they were all over the place. Shaven heads, saffron robes, all over the place. And it was like any other. It was like this, you know, beautiful philosophical gathering. I think they were Buddhists. And it just sort of hit my funny bone in a way. You know, I always thought of that as, you know, in the trades or in the business. But to think of it as a collective gathering of philosophically oriented people, I thought it was wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. The Freemasonry, I think, has that kind of embrace. So they're in the line to the oracle, a Masonic oracle. There is no weeding out. You get in line. When I get in line at the theater, I don't judge the people around me whether they're going to get much out of this or not. It's like, but I do judge people, thick-headed people that are dripping in diamonds and the gaudiness, talking all the way through an opera. I think they're a pain in the rear end. So it's, you know, or a stock car race, and somebody's just falling down drunk and ranting and raving. I think, well, you know, pick it up a notch. You know, you're embarrassing yourself and the rest of us, making us all look like fools. Masonry has that kind of embrace. What has happened within the order is about certain narratives being drawn out while others are ignored. I'm proposing that we examine one of those narratives to see if it satisfies us. Being an entered apprentice is no guarantee a man will work as a master mason. In the real world, we don't know. Here's the tools. You're taught how to care for them. You're taught how to use them. Do you have the touch to go from roughing in the blocks to creating some of the artwork? Well, we don't know that until we go along. And do you pick it up as a derivative by looking over the shoulder of another craftsman and copying his style? Or do you demonstrate some creativity yourself? We don't know until you're given a piece of stone to work with. Do we know that you will, when you need to make a corner and a straight edge, that you can do it, that you will learn repeated effort, and that eventually your corners will be true? We don't know. So in the meantime, you are an entered apprentice, but without the guarantee that you're going to work, only the opportunity. That in itself requires a good mentor and a dedicated, curious student, dedicated and curious, able to hone his skills. And the 1 in 100,000, aha, will be the genius. The next Michelangelo among us who draws life itself from stone. So the 99,999 are not lower standard. The genius is what it is. We went off tracks trying to accommodate so many slackers. I'm thinking we did that for noble reasons. Perhaps he is lively company who attends, even though he's a bit clueless. So what? Maybe he is Masonically illiterate, who doesn't connect the intellect with the experience. The question for us is not to question for him. If his question to the oracle is simple-minded, the answer will nevertheless be for him to sort out. Remember, the oracle gave obscure answers. What is the purpose of man? Know thyself. And her aides hustled you out of the grotto and brought in the next. Well, you know, there's Dale sitting there with a blank look on his face saying, what? I don't know the answer to that. You know, I don't understand that answer. You don't get a second question. It's not a little discussion. It's move on. That's your work. The understanding. Pay attention. Pace, eh? Aude vide tace. If we raise above the fray and look down on all aspects, Freemasonry cannot, in my mind, be other than what it is today. The impression, the imperfections, the opportunity, the concepts are always greater than reality, aren't they? Does that set us up for disappointment? Only if we're lazy thinkers. Only if we're living in that utopia environment where we think that the perfection of the idea is the way it should be in practicality. Wrong. Reality is an approximation of these high values and ideals. So that's why we're always incomplete. We're always. And what we're judging in our piety is not the shortcomings of other people, but we're looking at ourselves in the mirror. You and I and all around us have these ideals. There are men and women and children living on this earth that live each day in the grace of their Creator. Now, I don't know if that's the minority or majority. I know that zealots of any stripe are a pain in the arse, and they fight with the zealots of other faiths, and they all expect that we're going to back their sense of righteousness. Just makes no sense. They're a danger to each other. The right-minded amongst us find that balance point. The balance point where we realize that all people are united in the sense of the questions, the doubt. And we might obscure the doubt by saying, I know this firmly. You and I might ask for some evidence or a discussion or the back and forth of the argument, the gentlemanly argument, expecting to press each other until we can refine our understanding of ourselves. Not so when we are strangers. When strangers do it, it elicits this sense of fear because we assume that you're going to cause us harm. You're going to cause me harm when you're probing this because I can't trust you. So the first effort here, the phenomenology, the lessons, where do we go, is based on the development of trust. Our leaders, do you, as a leader within yourself, within the nature and scope of that universe of masonry that rests within you, work to earn the respect of your fellow man? And do you understand the nature of trust and stop making assumptions? People are often afraid and anxious of what they don't understand. A short amount of time taken to demonstrate that we are safe means that a person can talk with us without feeling that they're going to be judged, that their questions, regardless of the merit, the entered apprentice can ask a question that's not stupid. And he needs that answer, so it is important to him. The world around us in the Masonic environment, the Masonic community, is a natural state. It's not an artificial environment. We don't breathe rarefied air. The oxygen, the 7%, is not any different in the lodge than it is outside the door. All the biases and baggage come with us. We have an opportunity to put them down just for brief moments. Put them down and look around and see if our perception, if the phenomena looks any different. And then begin to ask the questions, what that difference is and what it does. Rather than a process of conviviality, lodges need to convey the true philosophical message of purpose of the craft. Insight. Insight is not dominance. It's not a laissez-faire, anything goes kind of an attitude. There are times when firmness is necessary. There is. And that means we have to be sure of the message that we're offering. That the point of that person, the personal development, is essential. And we are part of the process of bringing that trust to the forefront. This is when the inner apprentice within us begins to make great strides. When we learn that our mentors can be trusted to allow us to learn from our mistakes. You don't see this every day in everyday life, do you? So why would you think you should see this in a lodge? Stern-faced old men look down their nose at the imperfection that they see in front of them. Now, remember, these people who seem to be a harsh judge of others, who have that impious sense, are far more bitter and harsh toward themselves than they are to other people. Now, think about how isolated it is in that mind. Think of how fearful and mistrustful it is in that mind. Offer up your thoughts. The Sonic Home Companion. I'll set that up as the initials, hmc@gmail.com. Send me your thoughts on this. I'm beginning. The lessons seem to be settling in, and it's one of a freeing from the conflict and tension that often happens. And if that doesn't happen, we're left with these questions of purpose, the purpose of the order. Well, I'm thinking the purpose is in front of us. It's been with us all the time. The purpose is this collective process of stumbling along through life, searching for essential answers about ourselves. And we do that in order to answer the question, as the Delphi. What is the essential question of life? Know thyself. Well, the first reaction from the likes of me was, what the hell are you talking about? Know thyself? I have no idea what you're talking about. Now, you start to, through masonry, to connect the dots and begin to answer this question. Why do we do these things? So I have answers. So you have answers. But it's not on a linear trail. It's not a straight line. The insight doesn't come from the question itself. The path to that insight begins with the question. What questions are you asking of yourself and of masonry? What questions? What do you need to have done? The world is not a harsh place. It's full of mayhem. You know what's really hard in this world? There's things like poverty. Today, I'm still experiencing the shame of the country I live in being redefined by cultural genocide. Nobody intended it, right? Where have I heard that before in the Second World War? Where have I heard that? It sticks. It's part of the shame of history. I hope and pray that we're all better off for acknowledging it, understanding, never forgetting, and then learning from our mistakes. What to do? I can't account for the suffering. I can't. How to correct it? I don't know. I'd have to ask the victims, and I don't even know if that means they would know. But whatever they decide has to be good enough for me. Because my goodness, look what we've done. That went on up until 1994. Frightening, eh? Let's talk a little bit about something a little more uplifting than that impressions. Let's talk about our women's national football team defeating the Chinese 1-0. Hooray. In the World Cup, Women's World Cup. Let's acknowledge a tip of the hat to all the little rats jumping off the FIFA ship and the rest that are being hunted down with, you know, all these detectives chasing them around with a great big stick and knocking them in the seat of their Armani suits and kicking them out of their Jaguar. There's some smugness, I guess, in masonry when we know that there is an accounting. You know, that don't you remember? You know, there's a record. Everything that we do, there's an accounting for it. And you always think, gee, that's an odd way of saying it, but it's creepy. It's a bit creepy, but it's true. And so we find that it's not just true for us. It's true for everybody. It's true for everybody. Who actually reveals their true nature? I'll leave that with you right now. That will give me a brain cramp if we go down that route. We're going to continue later with the theme of friendship. You'll hear that in the music that's selected. My goodness, I wish I was 100 years older, because I don't know what this music was reflecting, that notion of friendship at different times. Was it Pete Seeger talking about the suffering of the poor that guilted the government into redistributing wealth? Well, we screwed that one up too. Let's be proud that the rich get richer and screw the rest. Hey, let's find some merit in the morality of that act. Giving a handout to somebody that's starving is vulgar, because it comes with that condescension. There, you're a second-class person here. I'm going to help you out, do you a great big favor. Well, here along comes masonry, and we peel back the layers of the term charity, and we find out there's, what, 5 different forms of charity? And then we think, well, you know, the bigger man would strive for the highest level. And that means we're assisting people, and they don't know they're being assisted, and they don't know it's us. And you think, well, you know, nobody's going to, you know, what do? I take a selfie and put it on the face page, and don't tell anybody why. Is that why I'm doing these things? Look at, I'm really generous. I've cut a big fat check. Therefore, I'm a better person. Or, you know, I'm a generous person. So the connection between human beings is all about money. It is when you're hungry. It is when you're cold. It is when somebody's trying to kill you. You need protections. Sometimes money will get you out of those kind of spots. So, interesting world, challenging world. It's not a place for dummies. Certainly not. That's why we can all be proud. I certainly am. Be proud to have been admitted to the Order of Freemasonry. And I feel a deep debt that I need to constantly repay. I need to be a little better and understand that means not that bloody sense of competitiveness. You know, if you're a golfer, you know that. You're competing with yourself. If you're shooting a game of snooker, you're competing with yourself. It's a focus, isn't it? It's a focus. If you're playing chess, it's that control of emotion. It's strategic. Come on, let's talk about our tracing board, man. What have we got here? I've had some quotes from Walt Whitman. You love these. No, really. This guy was a bright, bright man. He's an American poet and essayist and journalist. So broaden yourself. Take a big breath. We need to talk about poetry and what that does. Poetry is, as I've heard the expression of the emotion and the soul of the world. I love that. Don't you just find that? Come to Masonic Home Companion. Bring out your sense of imagination. That's what you're not going to answer all the questions that you have unless you elicit your imagination. Yeah, that's how it happens. And then we'll talk about how that fits into science. It depends on who you're listening to. You know, here, why are there trees I never walk under but large and melodious thoughts descend upon me? Why? The poet judges not as a judge judges, but as the sun falling around a hapless thing. He most honors my style who learns under it to destroy the teacher. You become your own teacher. Yeah. He was a part of the transition between transcendentalism and realism, incorporating both views in his works. So if those of you around are born on May 31st, you share a birthday with the guy. He was born up in West Hills, New York, believe it or not. And he only died in 1892. Yeah. So in Camden, New Jersey. So I'll leave it with you. We need some quotes from Walt. Well, it's a bit of a scuzzy-looking old bag, but, you know, weathered face. I'm as bad as the worst, but thank God I'm as good as the best. He really does sort of, you know, it makes you like, I have to think about that one. Do I contradict myself? Very well, then I contradict myself. I am large and I contain multitudes. As he says, be curious, not judgmental. Give me odorous at sunrise, a garden of beautiful flowers where I can walk undisturbed. Keep your face always toward the sunshine and shadows will fall behind you. Simplicity is the glory of expression. Shouldn't we all be that simple-minded person that is completely happy every single day of his life, who sheds the conflict and turmoil as easily as any Stoic? Pythagoras was a Stoic, yeah. But he saw harmony all around him in everything, the math, the music. This one strikes deeply with me. I no doubt deserve my enemies, but I don't believe I deserve my friends. They're wonderful people. Lovely. Re-examine all that you have been told. Dismiss that which insults your soul. I may be as bad as the worst. I see great things in baseball. It's our game. American, isn't he? He says the future is no more uncertain than the present. After you have exhausted what there is in business, politics, conviviality, and so on, have found that none of these finally satisfy or permanently wear, what remains? The question for the Editor Prentice. The question for the Lodge. After you have exhausted what there is in business, politics, conviviality, and so on, what have found that none of these finally satisfy or permanently wear, what remains? He says nature remains. Nature. The expression, the phenomena of the Creator, all things natural. I believe, said Walt, a leaf of grass is no less than the journey work of the stars. Aha. And your very flesh shall be a great poem. Walter Whitman. Thanks, Walt. We'll come back to a bit of that later in the program. And we need to get on with talking about some more symbolism. And if you fellas need to step away for a second and top up your beverage, I think that would be a good idea. Because, you know, you might as well enjoy everything that's going on. And remember, the beauty of independence, departure, actions that rely on themselves. You know, that's the beauty of independence. Please use, find that you don't have to be smug and you don't have to be self-centered about it, but find in what you do the satisfaction. It's there. The satisfaction where you can step away from the unnecessary and burdensome, complicated, unpleasant emotion life. You have a choice. You have a choice. There is no week, nor day, nor hour when tyranny may not enter upon this country if the people lose their roughness and spirit of defiance. Do we have it? Yeah. He proclaims that we convince by our presence. Woo. Ooh, there you go. If you done it, it ain't bragging. If you done it, it ain't bragging. Walt lived in a different time, didn't he? We live with the clamor of the competition of experience. I have more experience than you have. And now people are doing things instead of living to accumulate the experience. Talk about an indulgence. Wow. That is really... I heard what was said of the universe. Heard it and heard it of several thousand years. It is middling well as far as it goes, but is that all? So far... The symbolism of the first degree tells us how to behave properly in the experience of ordinary life. Think about it. I'm trying to pry you away from that birth, life, death motif. I'm not forcing broccoli onto your plate. I'm forcing guacamole, you know. It's a new flavor. You might like it. Avocado, you know, you might. So... we've got that. You know, we've tucked that under our belt. How to behave properly in the experience of ordinary life. Yeah. How to treat one another. How to treat yourself. Purge those, all that garbage and crap that's accumulated in your mind and in your soul. The symbolism of the second guides us to a proper system of moral behavior. Remember how it seems chopped up? As you read it, it doesn't read as one flowing narrative. And the antiquarian suggests it was because it was sort of a motif put together from other bits of work. So maybe, but we can agree, the experience of function and a proper system of moral behavior, we'll examine proper. These levels of achievement enable one to reach larger goals. Following these principles in the context of the interior journey, in your mind, one is guided by one's life experience and one's focus on the interior journey to that part of his interior represented by King Solomon's porch. Here, the temple is you. The temple is you. I am that I am. Remember all that kind of stuff in God's image, you know? Yeah. So the blasphemy for some very devout people is to try and replicate that. It's like trying to presume we understand the thought of God. Really, if we could understand it, it would be the thought of man, not the thought of the great creator. But there is difficulty. So we are, each one of us, that Solomon's porch, right? On the edge. But there is difficulty. Solomon's porch was that part of the temple which gave access to the Holy of Holies, what was precious. And the Holy of Holies is the place in the temple where the deity resides. We can all agree that the deity is without limit. Yeah. When one becomes aware of the presence of that being, that is without limits oneself, a freestanding, independent human cannot exist. What do you think about that? As we become aware of the presence of a being that is without limit oneself, a freestanding, independent human cannot exist. Huh. So that presence of the Creator within us means that our independence is somehow changed. Or is it saying that this is part of the human makeup? This is part of our independence. Is this relationship? Well, I guess that's a bit contradictory, isn't it? Can I be independent and in a relationship? Not in this sense, apparently. Here, I think, is the essence of the ritual of death in the third. It represents not physical, but rather it's the death of the self. When did we last talk about this? Control of ego. In order to achieve the higher levels of understanding, we need to be able to control ego. Damn that, Oracle. The answers are always a bit obscure, but penetrating. In the ritual experience, the candidate is raised to openness, to oneness with the worshipful master, an office representing the spirit. And from that level, one can experience the divine presence. This is where you step away from the phenomena and you get into the message. Yeah? That event represents symbolically the achievement of the objective of the intellectual community at the end of the Renaissance. One can experience the divine presence. This is an idea is no means unique to Freemasonry. We have a collective ego that's a bit, I think it's more like the ego of maybe a 20-year-old, you know. Yeah, still being tested. Wilmshurst, you know our friend W.L. Wilmshurst, and his, what I call the lamentation and observations in the 19th century. Things weren't going well for Billy. But he felt that the third is a mystical death, of which bodily death is taken as figurative. A mystical death. In all the mystery systems of the past will be found this degree of mystical death as an outstanding and essential feature prior to the final stage of perfection or regeneration. When I believe what is being said here is that through the act, the experience of ritual, when we achieve the understanding and we accept the insight, the death of our ego, then we are reborn, remade, reinvented. We are something more than what we were, or we could say we're something different than what we were. For the likes of me, I presume, in my own mind, that something is a better man, the bigger man. So we see hanging on our walls Solomon's porch. And in the picture, the veil is drawn back a little, offering just a glimpse into the chamber. Where we know who was in there, don't we? This board suggests that at the end of the journey, or we know not who, but what is in there. That's right. It suggests that at the end, from west to east, some process analogous to death enables the individual to experience the presence of the deity. after this process has occurred, he lives once more at his full potential. Makes me think that maybe this was what Aleister Crowley was searching for in Masonry, and when he didn't find it, when he didn't notice it, he went about in a more protracted way, maybe a bit more more visceral manner, trying to create his own ritual that would lead to this experience, the presence of the deity. Oh, he was out there, there's no question, but I think about the motive, what was motivating the fellow. After this process has occurred, he lives once more at his full potential. Maybe I would say fuller. Again, I think that this refers neither to a physical resurrection after physical death, nor to a life after physical, both of which are the concerns of religion. It seems to me that this refers to a psychological, spiritual process, which can occur within any devout individual who seeks it earnestly. And I believe it is to be the business of Freemasonry to encourage. After all, we claim to be Freemasons. And this is that truth, the knowing of which makes you free. Do we have it on the same page again? We need to talk about compass points at some point, don't we? Yeah. I've been having too much fun with you today. The idea of the death of ego, it's sort of something I want to carry around with me. You know, it's like something I want to consider when I'm cutting the grass or when I'm going for a walk. What is the state of mind? Again, we're having the conversation here that we can't have every morning while we're out there eating our meal. We do live a blessed and enriched existence. I think the people within the sound of my voice here in Canada realize how good we have it, how important it is to be vigilant that our rights and freedoms and what we have are not eroded by despotism and self-serving politics. We need to be able to defend that which was fought for, which other men and women gave their lives to preserve. This didn't come cheap. The battles that we see going on around the world were replicated, are echoes of the battles that our culture, our predominant cultures, had centuries ago. Not better than them, we're just further down that road. Nobody could have stopped this. Wisdom was there and couldn't stop the carnage. We had to keep killing until we just couldn't kill anymore. We didn't stop hating. That's a whole other process. So now we face the world. We look at the world where we're so well informed, so much better informed than we ever have been before. All the authority are on their heels, as they should be. We need to keep a watch on them because we are finding out what happens when we begin to trust the authority to take care of us without watching over them. Corruption leaks in. So we're taking pictures. You know what's going to change the world is these little smartphones. It's changing the world around us because it brings an unfailing accountability. It's changed the narrative. And man, don't become despondent because we're seeing that people in positions of responsibility are liars. They've always been, but they've been able to present themselves as a person of some piety and integrity because they felt that's what sold, that's what people want to hear. Now we're actually raising the bar. If you're just a lying piece of whatever, we're going to know about it because somebody's going to tape you or take pictures of you. And the courtroom is this just wild public opinion. Social media has made us judge and jury. If there's something going on, the result happens instantly. Absolutely instantly. The reaction. And it spreads. It's viral. It's viral. So all of our beliefs are being challenged. Yeah. And we're beginning to see the world being defined in front of us through social media. Masons have that inner conversation happening. I hope you're doing well this week. I hope you and yours are recovering their health. Because it matters. The people that are important to us mean that we're important to them. A little music wouldn't hurt right now, would it? It's still a bit morning-esque around here. Thank you for sitting down and having a chat with me this morning. Let's pick this up again sometime. If the dust and the demands of your day-to-day life don't overwhelm, life's a serious matter. It requires some thought to make good decisions. Make some decisions that bring about a contentment in life. Commit those acts of random Masonic kindness. Let's see if we can't change the world around us by making changes within ourselves and helping everybody to find the point of contentment. I look forward to seeing you again. Thanks for joining us on Masonic Home Companion. Bye. Thank you.
come to talk with you again. Because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping. And the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. In restless dreams I walked alone, narrow streets of cobblestone. Beneath the halo of a street lamp, I turned my collar to the cold and damp. When my eyes were stared by the flash of a neon light that split the night and touched the sound of silence. And in the naked light I saw 10,000 people, maybe more. People talking without speaking, people hearing without listening, people writing songs that voices never share. No one did disturb the sound of silence. Say I do not know. Silence like a cancer grows. Hear my words that I might teach you. Take my arms that I might reach you. But my words like silent raindrops fell and echoes the will of silence. And the people bowed and prayed to a neon god they made. And the sign flashed out its warning in the word that it was forming. And the sign said the words of the prophets are written on the subway wall. Tenement halls
from my friend with a little help from my friend.